Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another Be the Right Club Today podcast. Hal, it's just you and me this week. It's been a minute since it's just been us. No guests.
How about that? It's the way we started. It'll be all right. We'll make it through it.
That's right. None of our friends showed up this week. So it's just you and I. We're going to have to power through. So had an interesting finish, kind of a crazy tournament, Players Championship tournament. That was it's always so near and dear to your heart. What were your thoughts?
I thought it was a wild week. When you play in March, there's a possibility of Monday finishes, which they were lucky to get it in on Monday, actually. And, it was a wild finish. I felt like Cam's driver on 18 was – he got away with murder there. And I think if he had that to do all over again, I don't think he would have done that. Had I been his caddy, we'd have had an argument on 18T.
So expand on that. What? Give us the reasoning.
Well, at the time he was on the 18T, he had a 3-shot lead because the guy behind him hadn't made birdie on 17 yet. So he made that decision knowing that he had or should have known he had a 3-shot lead. He would have seen that. As he walked off the 17th green, he would have seen where the leaderboard was at. And, 5-iron, 5-iron, pitch and wedge, 2-putt for bogey, wins by at the most, at the worst, 1. And, he had hit 2 drivers into the water on 18. The last 2 drives he hit on 15 and 16, 15 was a pull draw that he ended up having a shot, and 16 was snap hook, which he'd hit several of them in the tournament. And, that was the last shot he hit with a driver before he pulled that driver on 18. So, I think for the kind of money he was playing for, he'd already made 10 birdies on the day. He had nothing left to prove other than just win the golf tournament. And, Paul Casey playing right with him hit 3-wood off the tee and had 205 yards, I think, to the flag, which is just a 5-iron for those guys. Something less than driver, I think, would have been a better play.
Well, and I definitely think your reasoning is sound, especially with the last swing he made. And I didn't know, I told you off air, I didn't watch a ton of the tournament, at least the middle, the third and the fourth round. So I didn't realize that, he had been fighting hooks or had hit 2 in the water on 18. But the struggle for me would have been his last swing on 16 was one of the worst snap hooks I've seen him hit, probably ever. And then, that shot in his memory getting up on 18 and then also having hit it in the water twice there. With a 3-shot lead, with everything you expand on, it'd been interesting to ask him that question and say, okay, why driver? Did you ever even consider hitting 3-wood or hitting a 4-iron or something just up the right side and play it as a 3-shot hole and get out of there?
So his last swing that he snap hooked into the water on 18, Paul Lazinger's exact comments pretty much were, folks, you will never see a player of his stature hit a bigger snap hook than he just hit right there. and he ended up making bogey, even though he did that.
Yeah.
But one of the things that bears mentioning here is he had 42 one putts. Mm. He had 42 one putts out of 72 holes. Mm. Think about that. That's a record.
Mm. Well, and then not to mention, he blocked that shot on 17 a little bit right of that flag where there's 10 feet of room. He mentioned that one in the interview afterwards. There's no way he was firing at that one. Here's something that we haven't talked about in a long time, but it kind of popped into my head. Think about the narrative. If his ball curves a little bit more right on 17 and goes in the water, or, he gets a bad bounce on a snap hook on 16 and makes double. And loses the tournament. Think about the narrative, the difference between a little bit of luck here and there versus, what the media is saying about him and is he a choker and this and that versus he wins and everybody forgets about everything else.
interesting to think about it that way. I mean, you know, just goes to show you that a lot of golf is luck, no matter how good you are. And, you know, one of the things that we talked about on the last podcast with Steve Elkington was how TPC favored not the biggest hitters in the game, but the medium hitters in the game. See, Keegan Bradley and him both, I mean, Keegan Bradley spent a bunch of money on 18.
That's funny. Yeah.
Because he hit the ball in the water on his second shot because he drove it through the fairway. And all of those guys, see, this is interesting. Pete Dye does so many things on his golf courses that are subtle, but yet play into it so much. If you drive it through the fairway on 18, whether you're short or whatever you are, the closer you get to the green, the left half of the fairway is sloped towards the water. So if you're hitting a low shot out and you're still trying to get it close to the water, the ball just continues to just trickle there because it's on a downgrade there. And, you know, I really don't understand why Cam did what he did on 18, even on the second shot. What is the point? I mean, it's like, I'm going to drive this point home and y'all make sure you pay attention to this point. And, you know, if he hadn't hit a great fourth shot there, there'd have been a playoff probably.
Yeah. When you had kind of mentioned off air, you would have done something completely different if you were his caddy. At first I thought you were going to go with the second shot because when I came in yesterday, there was a kid in the academy hitting some balls and we were talking about the finish. And I said one thing, I said, hey, if you want to be a good player, when you lay up, you lay up. You don't lay up into the hazard. You do not. That is one thing you cannot do. Do not bite off more than you can chew right there, especially with him having a 3/2-shot lead. Like, Chip, what's the difference between 160 and 120? Nothing. Like, just get it out back and play, knock it on the green, make your five, and go home.
Well, I agree with every bit of that. Lay up. If you're going to lay up, lay up. But the other thing is, if he had 42 one putts, I'm not sure that he drove the ball very well. And I wished I'd have looked at that stat before we got on air. But the truth of the matter is, when you have that many one putts, you're coming from trouble.
Yeah.
And which tells me he didn't drive the ball great that week. And I can tell you, the reason why I hit driver on 18 against Tiger was because I needed to have the last shot in. I had a one shot lead. And I needed to be able to decide what I was going to do. And second was, I drove it perfect that week. Yeah. So I really felt like that wasn't a problem for me to do it. And thirdly, I couldn't hit it through the fairway. I couldn't hit it long enough to hit it through the fairway. So it set up fine for me to do that. And anyway.
As we're talking, I'm going to try and look up his stats because I think that's interesting. Seeing the correlation between how he drove it versus number of putts. A lot was said about, what was it, the first round got rained out, second round, the wind just blew like crazy, and a lot was said. I heard our friend Brandel talk about this a lot with, I believe it was Paul McGinley on the Golf Channel telecast. I think something like just under half the players or just over half the players on 17 in the second round hit it in the water. Talk about your thoughts on when you see that. Brandel said it was luck. It wasn't fair. McGinley defended it and said it was luck, or it wasn't luck. It was, you know, it took skill to hit it on the green. And I think some of that is just where each of them grew up. Paul grew up hitting little chippy shots all the time and played in conditions like that where Brandel didn't have to as much. But, you know, what were your initial thoughts about just 17 and the conditions, and was it fair? Was it luck?
Well, I love the fact that I'm on the Paul McGinley side on that. You know, I've stood on that tee when the wind was blowing, and I've stood on that tee when the wind wasn't blowing. And I love the mystery of the shot. I think the fans love the mystery of the shot. You know, I read something this morning that I love this statement. God puts Goliath problems in your life to bring out the David in you. And, you know, I really believe the best players in the world figure out how to do that. And, you know, they meet the challenge. And, you know, the first time I won that tournament, the wind was blowing off our left side into us really hard. There was only two scores in the 60s all day that I recall. And, you know, I had to hit 8-iron, and I aimed it at the center of the green. And the wind moved the ball all the way over to where the flag was. And it was what ended up being a 6 or 8 inch putt. And trust me, I didn't intend to hit that ball over there. The wind moved that ball over there. Now, I was playing the wind. So to say that that wasn't a possibility that it ended up over there would have been false. Right. But that's just how much the wind moved the ball. I didn't play a fade with an 8-iron when I was young.
Sure. Sure. Do you think that one of the things that I keep thinking about is very few greens like that. There's very few island greens in golf to where you can land. I guess the only there's only one part of me, because I grew up in Oklahoma. It blows 50 up there regularly. So I didn't think it was necessarily luck. The challenge, like I heard Bubba Watson was talking about, I forget who he was playing with, but Bubba played really well. I think he shot, it was like bogey free 4 under. Him and Justin Thomas played
unbelievable
on Friday, right? But Bubba was commenting on it, and he was like talking about how hard it was, because he said one of the guys he played with spun it, it landed on the green and spun it back in the water, and then he dropped a wedge or dropped to, in the drop zone, hit a wedge, and I think he spun that one back in the water too. So the thing that made, to me, that made that so difficult was how soft the greens were. Because usually when it's windy in Florida, the greens are really firm. But as much rain as they had gotten, it was almost a perfect storm to where you could hit it on the green and spin it back in the water. But what's interesting to me, too, is the fact that with the island green like that, you know, there's no relief up by the green. Like, it would also be different if you landed that ball on land, if you could drop it a regular hazard. I forget what they call it nowadays. You know, it was a lateral or a yellow, red and a yellow. Now they're just all penalty areas. But if you hit it on the green, if you one hop it over, if you can drop there, that changes the whole aspect of that hole. Brandon was talking about having room in front and room behind, so you could kind of run it up, kind of British Open style. I don't know. It's just an interesting concept, because of just the fact that some guys hit really good shots. Again, this goes back to your luck comment, that landed on the green, spun it back in the water again, under 10 or 15 miles an hour. I don't think it's luck at all, or as luck isn't involved as much, but at 30, 40, 50 miles an hour, it's a completely different conversation.
So here's what I got to say about that, Chase. If you and I are on that tee and we got a little bet going on and the wind is blowing 40 miles an hour or 38 or whatever is blowing at the time. Yeah. And if the green was hard as a rock, it would be a guessing game. If the green is super soft, it'd be a guessing game. The truth of the matter is, let's just buckle our chin straps and see if either one of us can pull it off.
Sure.
And, you know, that's what they were doing. And, you know, one of the reasons why that's tough and people don't like that is that is out of the norm. Those guys don't play shots like that. So that segues us into talking about playing in the wind. Everybody's swinging as hard as they can these days, trying to hit it as far as they can. We see it every day in here. All the kids come in here, they're maxing out on every swing. And I've said it 1,000 times on here. I was forced into swinging at it hard, never chose to swing at it hard. When you're playing in the wind, you have to swing within yourself. That helps keep the ball down. That helps reduce the elements that you're dealing with. And, you know, today's environment is not conducive to really, really good wind players. You saw a few guys, if you watched that, there were a few guys that pulled way too much club and hit little shots. Notably, Justin Thomas did it a bunch. He did it a bunch. And, you know, and they marveled at how well he played that day, how well he managed his game that day. You manage your game in the wind like that whenever you're not swinging it hard.
So did you have a system for, or was it complete feel? How did you, let's talk about 17. So let's say
it was feel.
So say we've got 140. You had to at least do the math and kind of guesstimate how much wind was blowing and kind of run through all that stuff in your head. There were some calculations that had to happen. How did you do it?
Well, 140 was my max 9-iron. So in that condition right there, I never wanted to hit that when the grain was soft, you know, because that stood a chance of it landing on the slope and spinning back in the water. If the conditions were hard, Max Nine Iron was the right club to play. And
okay, but I'm saying, let's throw a scenario up. It's 140. Just say pins in the Sunday spot. And we've got, let's say, 30 miles an hour of wind, basically straight in.
Well, that might be a six or seven iron for me.
That's what I'm asking. How did you work through that?
That would have been totally feel. And I would have been trying to decide was, okay, how much rotation speed am I going to put on this shot? Am I going to bear down on it, or am I just going to waltz through it? And, you know, if you bear down on it and it's into the wind, you can expect the ball to shoot up. And, you know, you saw a bunch of that. Okay. They hated those shots. I mean, Brooks Koepka hit one that he knew was in the water almost the minute it left. Because that ball, he tried to hit it hard and it shot straight up and it like 20 yards carrying far enough. There were several guys that did that.
One of the things I want to mention is there's been a lot of research that shows that, say we've got a 20 mile an hour wind, the 20 mile an hour into headwind will affect the ball. Typically, let's just say for 150 yards, it's going to affect the ball. If you had a 150 yard normal flighted shot, your stock 150 yard shot, it's going to affect it more than 20 yards. Downwind 20 miles an hour, it's going to tend to affect it a little bit less than 20 yards. So into the wind is going to affect you more. Downwind is going to affect you a little bit less. This is kind of a little bit of the other way on downwind shots. Would you hit it harder downwind? Did you ever worry about the wind knocking it down? Did you try to get it higher? What did you do downwind?
It never seemed to carry my ball as far. So, you know, I always felt like I was longer into the wind than a lot of guys and shorter downwind than a lot of guys, which is basically what you just said.
No.
But here's the truth. There was no real data that supported any of that other than I had played for so long, it stood out in my mind that that's the way it was. Sure. You know, you mentioned system earlier. There was no systems whenever I played. It was just playing enough and having enough experience that you knew what the trend was. And, you know, we're looking for numbers on everything we do in the game right now.
Well, but how, like when I say system, I'm saying like, when you hit wedges, you have an idea. Your system for wedges was a 3/4 shot went about this far, a full swing went about this far. I'm talking kind of like an overgeneralization would be like the Dave Peltz clock system. You take it back to however right. You look at the clock, 3 o'clock, 9 o'clock, and go through and hit it a certain distance. Like, cause I was telling you off air, I played in a little tournament these last 2 days and it blew pretty hard. We had gusts up to probably 30, 35. And, for me, after being a Big Easy, after being at the par 3 course, I've always been a pretty good wedge player, and I've always kind of had like a what I call full 75% and half, not really positions, but speeds. And my full wedge goes 100, or lob wedge, whatever it is. It's basically 180 and 60 are my numbers. Well, I started kind of adding a little 3/4 iron shot that it's kind of a stock 3/4 shot for most of my clubs. And so I know for instance, my 5 iron carries 200 yards and my 3/4 goes 185. Well, that 3/4 goes 185, whether it's there's no wind or whether it's into a 20 mile an hour wind, because I hit it so solid and so flighted that the wind doesn't really mess with it a whole lot. And so that's kind of what I was asking with you, like on 17. Do you know that your 3/4 seven iron tends to go about this distance, or was it, you know, was it all a feel / guessing game for you? Because because when I grew up in the wind, it was always like smashing it low and hitting low stingers all the time. And as I've gotten better at controlling it, I hit these little 3/4 chippy shots and the wind really doesn't mess with it too much.
So I'll answer you by asking you a question. When you say 3/4, are you talking length of backswing or are you talking speed of rotation?
So that's a great question. I would say both. I would say my 3/4 shot is about 3/4 length. It feels like for me about chest high, like left arm parallel, whatever. And then speed wise, I don't really, I think about it from club head speed. Like I think about it from force. I don't really, I'm not trying to rotate less, or I don't really feel like it's a body movement thing. I feel like it's more of a effort thing. I'm trying to go 75% effort. And it's just the little shoulder high to shoulder high, little chippy punch shot. And one thing that that's really helped me in the wind is understanding that if I hit a six iron 140 yards into a, say I hit a six iron 140 yards in the desert of Palm Springs with no wind and it flies 140 yards, it's a little chippy shot into a 50 mile an hour wind, that club's gonna, that shot's gonna go about the same distance. It'll go a little less, but the wind's not gonna mess with it. But if I hit a pitching wedge 140 yards with no wind and then hit a pitching wedge into a 50 mile an hour wind, that pitching wedge is going to go about 100, you know, 90 yards or whatever it is. And so that's what I'm referring to system. That's one of the things I've been trying to get players to understand is if you're a good distance, if you've got good distance control with your wedges, there's no reason why you can't have good distance control with a seven iron. You can hit a million different shots with a seven iron, just like you can hit a million different shots with a lob wedge.
So I think a really important point that needs to be made right here is defining effort. I love your term of effort. See, but my definition of effort is how fast I rotate through the shot. And I never had a long backswing. So I never, ever had the feeling that I shortened my backswing. It may have based on the length of shot, but, you know, I reduced the effort that it took to get it to go that far. And the way you defined effort there, that would be what I would say I did. So, you know, I'm not saying I was right or wrong. I'm just saying that's who Hal Sutton was, and that's how I knew how to do it.
Yeah. Well, and like I always struggled. I was taught the Pelts clock system. Most of y'all out there probably heard of Dave Pelts and his clock system and all that stuff. It was basically like go to different positions and swing at the same effort, and the ball would go different. The ball would go different distances. I always struggle with that, especially as a kid, because I was always going so fast. So I could go to 9 o'clock or to full and hit them the same distance because I would fire through and I could never control it. So now I do it similarly to you as far as how you did it. I just kind of have in my mind, I'm like, okay, my full seven iron goes 180. My little three-quarter chippy seven iron goes 160. And so those are kind of the numbers I play with. And then I'm like, okay, how much wind do we have? We have 25, 30 miles an hour of wind, let's say, and I've got a 160 yard shot. That's pretty close to my little chippy 150 yard shot. It's pretty close to my little chippy seven iron. And again, I'm going to say this one more time. I'm going to hammer this point home. If you chip a six iron 140 yards, the wind's not going to mess with it much. If you hammer a six iron, or if you hammer a wedge the same distance, the wind's going to eat it up. The other thing I would say is, and how I'd like to ask you this question. The times now that I go really hard, I'll swing really hard with irons is downwind, and downwind to back pins would be when I would take like a pitching wedge or a nine iron or an eight iron and really try to send it because I want to keep it in the air. So the wind will help me versus if I flight it all, just like you said, you tended to flight it more and the wind would kind of knock it down. So into the wind, if you can develop these little chippy shots, the wind won't mess with it much. And that's why I think how like, if you and I were playing together back when I was, say, at my best when I was on the mini tours or whatnot, you would have probably hit less. You would have probably hit your irons further than I did into the wind because my ball would have gotten up in the air and spun too much. But then the exact would have been opposite downwind. I'd have hit it a lot further, and yours would have been, you know, knocked down a little bit.
Yeah. Well, that's what I experienced on the tour. You know, I had a better advantage into the wind at getting the ball out there a long ways than I did downwind. I could significantly see the difference off the tee with guys that I was playing with that hit the ball high. You know, I flighted the ball much lower. I'd hit the ball a lot further when the wind was blowing. I mean, you know, early on in my career, I love to see the wind blow, man. I tell you right now, I felt like I had an advantage whenever I got up and the wind was blowing. I mean, in 83, we got up that morning, the wind was blowing hard, and I'm thinking, man, this is right up my alley. And I was two or three back. I don't remember what I was back. John Cook had the lead. And, you know, I was liking my chances because I could flight the ball down.
How'd you handle crosswinds? Would you like with you tended to draw your irons a little bit? So did you ever work it into the wind? Did you tend to hit your shot and just kind of play the wind? How did you manage that?
So, you know, I don't mean to be avoiding the question, but every shot was different. There was no way that I could actually tell you what I would do until I felt the shot. And, you know, that's where the word system is alien to me because I had no system. And, you know, I had to feel it. And that's why I loved the game. I mean, it felt like it was art to me. I felt like no two shots were the same and no two shots were alike. And I didn't want to even, you know, coin them into being alike because they weren't. You know, all the times, I don't know how many TPCs I played in there, but a lot, from 1983 to 2004, I think. So that would have been 21 years. Very seldom did I stand on the 17th tee and feel like it felt like another time. Every shot felt like a new day, a new decision to make, I went in there not hitting it as well as I sometimes did, or I went in there hitting it great. You know, that changed the way the shot felt to me. You know, the wind changed the way it felt. The humidity changed the way it felt. So, and I'm going to tell you this, I don't care, even with no wind, I'm not going to tell you that I ever felt like I stood on that tee and knew exactly the outcome was before I hit it. Never felt that way, even with no wind. So.
But you still, you know, shot your shot, meaning you still had a precise game plan and attempted to hit it like you knew where it was going, but there was always that little bit of doubt, like what's up there, kind of like 12 at Augusta, like what's it going to do, does it need to go, does it need to set?
Well, I committed to something. I had to make a decision and I had to commit to that something and I had to accept the outcome. There were other times that accepting the outcome was not I wasn't going to face as big a penalty if I was wrong. That's a big penalty if you're wrong there.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it, that's what the fans love about it. You know, the reason why they were able to play for $3.6 million first prize is because everybody loves the TPC. They could play for that kind of money at Augusta too, if they really wanted to, because Augusta's got that kind of money coming in.
Yeah. I'm going to try to pin you down a little bit more with your approaches on these shots. Just because I think there's some interesting conversations to have and it'll help our listeners. We've talked a lot about your game, you and I off the air. We've talked a lot about your game on here. And correct me if I'm wrong, but you didn't work your irons a ton, right? Little draws, but pretty straight overall, right?
Yep. Right.
A lot of players, like, you know, I played with Jerry Kelly. I played with a couple other guys and we've asked some on here, but we asked Watson this too. Did you try to fight the wind, or did you let it move you? Meaning, like, would you, if it was a big right to left wind, would you try and work it into it to hit it straighter, or would you just take it straight and let the wind curve it? For you, like off the top of your head, historically, how did you try to control your ball at all times, or did you at times throw it up and let the wind mess with it some?
So, one of the greatest players I ever played it with in all my days was Lee Trevino. Early on, Lee Trevino told me, he said, do yourself a favor, let the wind be your friend the rest of your life. And, you know, I took that to heart. And, you know, right or wrong, you know, one of the things, I feel like I'm in a really funny spot in my life right now because I'm questioning a lot of the things that I did as a young man that I took as gospel from people that I had a great deal of respect for. I'm wondering how much of that they really knew for sure. I don't think they knew a whole lot of it for sure. I think they were telling me their best guess. And I took it as gospel, basically. You know, the two greatest shot makers I ever saw play the game. Let me put three in there. Trevino, Tiger Woods, and I would throw Seve in there from 150 yards in too. And they had the biggest imagination and could actually commit to something different. Now, that's really hard to do, to commit to something different than you normally do.
Yeah.
And everybody listening out there, they know exactly what I'm talking about. You know, you stand up over a shot, it's easy to commit to something that you've done a million times. It's harder to commit to something that you've done a few times. But there are occasions that doing something that you've only done a few times is the right shot. Tiger never hesitated to do that, that I ever saw. Seve never hesitated to do that when he was 150 yards in. And Trevino never hesitated to do that quite a few times.
So Tiger has famously hit the stinger, you know, kind of helped coin the term, invented the term kind of. He seemed like he was the one that was trying to control his golf ball, you know, not let the wind move it around. And he wanted to force the issue a little bit. I mean, would you agree with that statement? Is that kind of what you saw?
At times I saw that, and at other times I saw him let the wind be his friend. You know, I think putting somebody into a system is tough to do, especially someone as great and as talented and as imaginative as Tiger Woods was. I mean, I don't think Tiger, you know, his mold changed as it needed to, basically.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about all the time, having all the tools in the toolbox at your disposal. Yeah. I guess I'm still just kind of getting into, like, you know, not stock shot, but like your first idea when you go out and you're going to play in the wind was, what did your brain go to? Okay, I'm going to try to just hit my normal shot and take some speed off and hit it fairly straight and let the wind do it. Or like when I played with Jerry Kelly at sectionals US Open qualifying, and I've told the story to a bunch of people, but we were at Scioto and at Scarlett, and he had a couple of shots into big crosswinds, and he like sliced it into a right left wind and hooked it into a left right wind. And I was a college kid at the time, and that was the first time I'd ever seen anybody do that. I was like, oh my gosh, I couldn't believe it. And that's kind of what his caddy said he liked to do, at least at the time, was he kind of liked to work it into it because he felt like he had more margin for error that way. And I was just blown away. I was like, I would have never seen that shot. You know, I was always keeping it low and working, letting the wind work it a little bit. So that's the only reason why I'm kind of trying to pin you down a little bit and see kind of, you know, where your comfort level was when the wind, you know, what did you gravitate towards when the wind was blowing?
So here's something that needs to be said at this point, I think, is most of the people when they're in a high wind are just trying to survive, and they're not experimenting. They're just trying to survive, and they're trying to survive with what they actually know they can do. So they're not increasing the tools in their toolbox, as you say. They're trying to use the tools that they have as usefully as they can use them. And, you know, that works at a certain level. But, you know, when you get in to what they were doing this weekend, you know, playing for that kind of money.
you've never used those tools before. Right?
Yeah.
Right. Like,
and that takes some courage. That takes some courage to use something you've never done before.
Yeah. I mean, that's to your previous point, that's what made Tiger, and I mean, really, to me, Tiger would hit any shot at any time if he thought it was the right one and he could commit to it. That's the hardest part of the whole thing. It's, as guys, we like to experiment and practice and do different shots, but like actually trying to pull it off under pressure and being completely committed to it, that's what made him so great.
Yeah.
How did you handle off the tee, like with driver, three woods, like tee shots into the wind? Did you try to keep it lower? Did you just, I mean, again, you're keeping your speeds from getting too high obviously helped you, but did you ever put it back and try to draw it? Did you ever do anything different off the tee?
I would occasionally move the ball a little further back in my stance, but you know, my trajectory would have been considered low among anybody's, you know, my normal trajectory, you would have considered a low ball. And, I had more struggle moving the ball forward and trying to loft it stay behind it and get it in the air, launch it at a higher angle. That was more troublesome for me. And, you know, therefore I wasn't as good downwind as some of the guys were.
That's interesting too. In the age of spinnier golf balls, it's a testament to how solid you hit it, but just for you to be able to keep it low into the wind with a Bellotta golf ball or the Stratas or, whatever ball we're talking about. But it's also interesting that same technique, would almost not have enough spin on it downwind too. You would think that, it would have been easy to just launch that thing up in the air as much spin as those balls had on them.
Well, I mean, the game has changed. You know, you go back and look at most of the guys from my era, none of us were swinging way up on a driver compared to what they are now. Right. I mean, I bet even the best drivers of the ball that hit it fairly high probably had a kind of a zero. Yeah. Not a, I would have been negative. I would have been one or two down, probably one down. And maybe the best, highest launcher in the game might have been one up. We see it way different than that now. Yeah. And
how I would say, too, I bet there were plenty of guys back then that were three or four down, maybe even.
Yes, five, I'm certain there were.
They were probably hitting 10 and a half to 12 degree drivers, whatever they were stated, there was probably a little bit more loft on it than even that. Depending, I know there were some really low launching or low lofted driver heads back then too, just to keep the ball down. But I'm sure, because Sergio now's two or three down still, hits down on it really hard. That they say tour average is about one down on the PGA Tour. I don't think it's that. I think it's probably one and a half or two up now. But there were guys that were smashing into the ground back then for sure.
Yeah. I don't know. I watched this weekend with.
Did you enjoy Friday? Did you enjoy watching the carnage?
I did. I did enjoy watching that. I've hit shots there where when the I'm trying to think. A couple of the guys drove it in the left rough on number four. And I drove it in the left rough on number four a couple of times there that I can recall trying to, you've got that big hill that you can't quite see the left side of the green and you got deep grass and you're just hoping that it comes out there like you think it's going to come out.
Yeah.
I've hit shots that were into the wind on number seven from out of the fairway and the pin is back right. And I'm standing there posing on it, thinking it's perfect. And the wind hits it just right. And it comes down in the bunker. There's a lot of shots on that golf course that I recall hitting that it's like, 13, you get that hole into the wind and you get a longer shot into there. I've seen shots hit at the left side of the green. You can just see it. It looked like it's doing this, where it's bouncing up into the air, because the wind just keeps hitting it.
Like it's taking an elevator and just going.
Yeah, up. It's like it's taking an elevator going up.
What's so hard, I couldn't imagine, pulling up on 17 with the wind blowing that hard and having hit five or six iron. It's like 140 yards and the green's tiny and you're like, you're chipping five or six iron into that hole. And that's probably, I probably would have tried to chip a six. Somebody said, I saw a deal, Justin Thomas had 181 ball speed on 18 and the ball flew 240 yards. I mean, 181 is normally a 305 yard carry and it flew 240.
So the fun part would be if you and I were just standing on that tee and it was nothing but our pride on the line. To hit a shot like that would be fun. We would embrace the challenge of it. But to hit a shot like that when the winner of the event is going to get $3.6 million and you making a bad decision can take you out of the equation. And, there's two sides to that. There is the side that says, hey, we need to take that variable out of it, playing for that kind of money. And then there's the other side that says, hey, man, that's a lot of money. And any way that I can, be part of that, I'm happy to be part of that. And I'm kind of the last guy. I mean, any way I can be part of that, I want to be part of that.
Well, the hard part is if it's just you and I out there playing and our pride's on the line, it's a text message between our buddy group chat, or it's us riving each other, you know, or the mindset is let's see if we can pull this off, right? Let's see if we can chip a little 6 iron and get it back there, a little 5 iron and get it back there. When millions of people are watching, it's, you know, if I screw this up, I'm going to be on ESPN and it's going to make me look like a fool and an idiot with all my sponsors and fans, and they're going to question it just like you and I are questioning it right now. So it's always going to be like that, but it's a completely different mindset. And I obviously have never felt it like you have, but versus if it's just us two out there and no one's watching, it doesn't matter. It's a lot easier to try to accept how difficult it is and how crazy it is. And let's see if we can do it.
So let me share this with you. I think it's really important to share this right now. I'm a lot of years past that, and it's just a faint memory in my mind. The money has been spent and I can barely recall it. So why not enjoy it along the way?
Yeah, try to, for sure. For sure. How'd you handle putting?
Well, you're talking about putting in heavy winds.
Yeah. Did you widen your stance? Did you do anything setup wise?
I used to set a little bit more into my left side whenever the wind was blowing. That's really all I did. You know, I'd set a little bit harder into my left side so that I felt like I was constantly going down at it instead of, you know, I didn't want to hit up on any putts at all, especially when the wind was blowing. And you get a little bit of wind that's moving you around a little bit. I felt like I always had a tendency to hit up on it a little bit. And so I had rather keep a constant of a little bit downward.
Kind of stay in it. That brought me to my next question that I forgot to ask you earlier. So you said that you always pretty much made the same length backswing, but controlled your speed. I know for me personally, I struggled at times when I was younger. If I slowed down, I would completely come out of it and hit it miles right, or just wouldn't stay committed, wouldn't stay locked in or whatever. How did you learn how to do that? Like, how did you learn? Because to me, it takes some skill to be able to, like you've said, you've made people do it with driver, making long swings and trying to hit it straight. And I do it a lot with short game, making long swings and see how short you can hit it and stay committed to it the whole time. But how were you able to slow down but still hit really, really solid shots that didn't, you know, some people gripe about they'll pull short ones or when they take speed off, or they'll hit it way right when they take speed off. You know, did your dad make you do hit any of these shots? How'd you develop that skill?
I played by myself all the time. When I was a kid, I played by myself a lot, and I tried things, and, you know, I tried to swing within myself all the time. And I found that slower worked better for Hal than faster worked for Hal. I could feel things better. I could feel where we talk about where the club face is at all the time. I could feel the club face when I went slower. When I kept the club in front of my turning body, I could feel the shaft. I could feel where the club head was. When I went fast, sometimes the club head got behind me. Sometimes the shaft got behind me, and I had to slow down in order to get it to catch up. And boy, that usually produced really bad results. And my guess is a lot of those snap hooks that Cam was hitting, he felt some of that. Sure. And, you know, I tried to keep the club in front of me at all times. I knew, you know, you stand up here to box somebody like this, I'm going to hit you. If I can keep you in front of me and keep my arms in front of me, I'm going to hit you. If I get back here, there's other things that I got to figure on getting there. So, you know, and that's what happens as we age. You know, we're not as supple. We can't turn as much. We can't rotate as much, but we know we want to catch it from the inside. So the club gets behind us and we still want to hit it as far as we can. We go fast. We're just not strong enough to keep the club in front of us.
Okay. So we're back to 17, 140 yard shot, 20 mile an hour wind. You decide it's a 165 yard shot. You're going to chip a 6 iron. When you get over the shot, where's your brain at? Are you visualizing a window? Are you visualizing a speed? Are you visualizing a feel, a tempo? How do you, especially, you know, when the wind's blowing, you can hear it kind of blowing around in your ear, and it's, there's just a lot of distractions going on at that point. Where's your mindset at? How do you stay committed to that?
I'm visualizing the speed that I want to
visualizing a speed. Okay.
Yeah. And visualizing the speed that I want my body to turn at.
And again, that's just a feel of a speed like that. There's, you'd never really had like an idea of a number in your head, or it was just kind of a feel.
I don't know how we'd have measured a number to even have a number.
Well, and that's a good point. I guess like what I do sometimes is I'll feel like I want to carry this 160. So like I kept that like 160, 160 just to keep me from going too hard or energizing it too much.
Yeah. Well, so I was on another podcast recently and they were talking to me about, you know, what's the most club I ever hit at number 7 at Pebble Beach. And I said, well, I chipped a 5-iron there one time. That's a different animal. You can't even talk about that animal the same way you would talk about number 17 at TPC, because there's no land in front of you at TPC, and it's complete land in front of you. So, you know, all I was trying to do when I chipped that 5-iron on 17 is get it in the front bunker somehow. Getting it on the green was not even part of the equation. If that chip 5-iron had ended up on the green, it would have been some miraculous something that caused that to happen, because all I was trying to do was chip it in the front bunker, which, you know, is alluding to what I said earlier. You're trying to survive.
Oh, yeah.
When you get in wind like that, you're just trying to hit a shot that allows you to survive.
Yeah. Golf in itself is survival mode. Tournament golf is survival mode, but in that wind, it's to hang on for dear life and try to get and get it done. Visualizing speed was an interesting thought though. Like, was it I'm hammering you on this point because you were such a good wind player. And I think we can, again, glean a lot of cool stuff out of this. Was it a practice swing speed? Was it just gleaning on history, gleaning on past results? And you just had an idea that
it was leaning on past results, and it was leaning on whatever I felt like I needed to go speed wise. You know, I always took slow practice swings. I never emulated a full swing like I was fixing to put on the shot. You know, so much of the time, I had little three-quarter. I was just building rhythm. I was feeling the club in front of me as I turned. And, you know, I didn't want to feel this, you know, or I wanted to feel rhythmic with whatever I was doing, no matter how much wind we were dealing with. You know, this is funny. This is a guy right here in South Texas. When I was playing with him, I played with a guy named, we had a tournament at my home club that my dad started. It was a college prep. And what it was college players played a best ball tournament with a high school player. And it gave coaches an opportunity to look at high school players playing against college players. It was really a cool concept. And I never will forget this. I was playing with Ron Kilby, who was here. He was a player for the University of Houston. And, a good player. He's still a good player, but he never made it on the tour. But he told me one day we were playing, he said, Hal, he said, you really got to swing slow into the wind. You cannot swing hard into the wind. And he played so good the day. Wind was blowing, howling. And I mean, he just played beautifully all day long. And his swing was just so rhythmic. And I think that had such an effect on me for the rest of my life. I don't think if Ron listens to this, it'll be the first time he's ever heard that, because that had a big effect on me. And, you know, I really admired what he was doing. I admired how well he did it. And I mean, he never swung at it hard, and he handled the wind beautifully.
I told you about one of my previous instructors, Jim Woodward, played on tour for a while. I don't know if you ever played with him, but he was out
there. Oh, yeah.
He was a really good ball striker, one of the better players I'd ever played with at the time. And it was in high school, when I was working with him, and he was the same way. He was such a smooth iron swinger. And he always tells a funny story. His son was out there watching mitt balls one day, and he was hitting 7-iron, and his son was like, Daddy, swing harder, hit it harder. And so he went and grabbed a 6-iron and he hit it instead of his 7-iron. But he would always tell me the same thing, because I was just like the typical kids we see here. I was over swinging my irons, trying to hit them so far. And he's like, Chase, you got to learn how to hit it softer. You got to learn how to hit it softer into the wind. We were in Oklahoma, and I learned how to do it, but I didn't completely own it till really probably 5 or 6 years ago, to where now I can. Kids that I go play with now all the time are like, man, you don't hit your irons very far. And I'm like, yeah, because I don't need to. Like, I can hit it further if I have to, but I don't really want to. And so I think that idea of smooth and solid, really, it's, you got to hit it solid into the wind, and you can't spin it too much. And that's slower and solid contact. And that's the key. Again, I like to have an idea of little three-quarter iron shots. How far do they go? So I've got full and three-quarter, and then I kind of base everything from there. I don't quite have the results, the long-term success that you have, Hal, as far as being able to, you know, pull on all my past experiences of good shots. So I had to kind of develop somewhat of a systematic approach, but I definitely don't want it to sound like this. It's a complete system for me, because it's, wind is such a big variable and it's always changing. And I think you have to feel your way around every shot, but I have at least I have a starting point where I'll start and say, okay, this one goes this far, this one goes this far. Okay. Now, is it the bigger one or the smaller one, and feel it? And do I want to cut it a little or draw it a little bit? But I have to, if I don't have the baseline to start from, I'll get brain dead and hit some squirrely shots.
So I will share this with you. I think it's appropriate to do this. The players that I admired the most looked like they had multiple shots all the time. There was no system in place. It was whatever it called for at the time. And, you know, if I look back at my career, which I can do that easily right now, and say, what did I lack? The ability to hit it hard. So I couldn't take advantage of being downwind like I needed to. Would I have been a better player if I could have done that? Absolutely, I would have been a better player. I'd have reached some par fives that I wouldn't even have gone for the way I normally played. So, you know, what am I saying by that? To all the people that are listening out there, experiment, expand your toolbox. You know, figure out how you can do things differently than status quo. You know, so much of the time we go out there and just do what we know how to do all the time. And we're not growing when we're doing that. You know, we're just being who we are. And that's not all bad if you're already great. But, you know, if you're trying to get better, you better experiment.
And it's okay to struggle in a tournament when you're trying, or struggle in a money game when you're trying something new, right? Like, see if you can commit to it. See if you can figure it out. I think too many times, we treat all these tournaments or these money games as our Super Bowl. And if we don't perform, we have to blow it up and start over and change some things. And then the last thing I would say is, and you've echoed this a bunch today, but especially in wind, but in every shot you hit for the rest of your life, what's your target? What's your plan? And can you commit to it? Can you execute? And you're never going to completely control the golf ball. You're never going to completely control the result. But you can control your pre-shot routine, your thought process, and your commitment to that, whatever game plan you come up with. And if you can control those things, you have a chance to be the C word, more consistent. Because again, like Hal, one of the best iron players, one of the best ball strikers to ever play the game, and he didn't have complete control over his golf ball. So you're never going to be that. You're never going to have that. But if you can control the stuff before you hit it and then commit and let it go, that's our best opportunity for great golf.
You know, I was thinking about something this morning. I don't know how this is going to come off, but I think it's factual. You know, we spend our whole life trying to control everything around us the best we can, control the environment around us, and, you know, and then try to sustain whatever we can control. We want to feel that high of greatness wherever it is. One thing that I can conclude, I'll be 64 next month. Nothing stays the same. Nothing is the same. Nothing will ever stay the same except the Bible. That's the only thing in all 63 years of my life that has been completely consistent and same. Everything else is constantly changing. Amen. Your golf game too. Amen. Amen. Yeah.
Well, guys, as always, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for all the feedback. We get emails all the time, messages on social media all the time about you guys enjoying the podcast and liking our guests and all that. Feel free to continue to give us feedback. If you got any questions about wind and how to play in the conditions and how to hit different types of shots, obviously we'd love to hear about them. We'd love to answer questions and help out any way we can. Well, as always, thanks. Enjoy these things. They're fun. We'll have some good guests coming up and some good topics coming up. You guys keep tuning in and keep hanging out with us.
Have a good day, everybody.
Be the right club today. Yes!